everybody. Welcome back to the Jedi Build Your Future podcast. Today, we're going to be talking to a few guys, tradespeople, from the organization Guaranteed Tech Academy. Our guests today are Tom Taylor and Joe Bonnell. So first, I just want to welcome everyone, and I'm going to do a quick land acknowledgement before we get started. I'd like to acknowledge that the Jedi office is located in the traditional unceded homeland of the Wolastoqiyik people. This homeland and all of New Brunswick are covered by the Treaties of Peace and Friendship, which Wolastoqiyik, Mi'kmaq, and Passamaquoddy peoples first signed with the British Crown in 1725. The treaties did not deal with surrender of lands and resources, but in fact recognized Wolastoqiyik, Mi'kmaq, and Passamaquoddy title, and established the rules for what was to be an ongoing relationship between nations. So I'm gonna get into this, guys. Why don't you guys just introduce yourselves? Tom, I'll let you go first, and maybe you can just give us a little bit of, you know, your background and share a little bit about your journey and how you, you know, who you are and how you went from building your companies to where you are now.
Okay. Well, thanks for having us. We appreciate it. It's an honor to be here.
Oh, no problem. I'm so happy to have you guys.
I've been, I don't know how far you want me to go back. I've been in the trades most of my life. So I got started at 14 years old working with my dad doing air conditioning in the summer times. And then when I was 16, he forced me to go to night school to get my license for natural gas.
Okay.
And I went.
Was that against your will?
Yeah, or? It was very much against my will, and I didn't enjoy it much in the beginning. But come to the end, I really enjoyed it. I killed the exam, and you know, got a license in 6 months, which now takes 5 years to get.
Right.
I was fortunate that way, and then ended up working for a company in new construction, doing mostly duct work. And worked for that company for about 2 years and realized I went as far as I could go with them. I saw there's no potential for a raise. I'm as high as I can go.
Right.
So my next step was to start doing my own thing. So I started subcontracting for that company and then others along the way. And back then I was in Ontario and had an opportunity to move out to New Brunswick then when the natural gas lines were coming through.
Okay.
And at that time, my wife and I were looking into moving into Northern Ontario because we couldn't take the growth that was going on. We're small town people.
And what time period was this in?
That would have been about 2002, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. So then we made the move out here for that gas industry and wasn't quite what we thought it was going to be as far as the industry goes. It was a tough go, but learned a lot along the ways, kind of switched gears, got more into the refrigeration side of the business, which I never had plans for. And
how did that happen?
A lot of, let's say, politics and stuff in the industry and work being diverted everywhere except, you know, where we wanted it to go.
I feel like it's always like that, eh?
Yeah. A lot of free furnaces and stuff going on back then. And so it's kind of hard to compete with free, you know? And
yeah. Oh, no.
So, and then so fast forward, you know, like 20 years later, I've always kind of seen, like, look to the future. Like, that's why I got into my business, because I saw that I capped out where I was. And seeing the trend where we were going, that there was going to be a labor shortage, that's when I started thinking about, you know, starting our own college to help raise people for the business. But getting into that, timing was horrible. It was during COVID.
Right.
It was tough times to get it going. So it was small starting. And we took one brief year off between now and then. But yeah, we ended up getting way more people than we could ever use and helping out industry partners and stuff. So now it's more about helping other, or helping out our competition, really.
Right.
Like, we want to partner with everybody and just help them get people to meet the needs today.
So. Right. So Tom, what was missing in the trades landscape that you thought that, you know, hey, GTA can address this?
Okay. Yeah, that's a great question, because that's kind of our purpose really is, you know, we were getting a lot of our new employees through other career colleges, and what we found was when they came out of the school, a lot of them couldn't even operate a drill.
Like, yeah.
And a lot of our technicians, like, we've learned that they assume everybody knows everything, right?
So, yep.
And the thing about instructors is we have to have a Red Seal instructor doing the program. And a lot of times, you know, they have a hard time thinking back to what it's like to just start fresh.
Right, right.
Because they've been through it all.
Yeah.
Joe's great at this. He's one of the best I've seen. So, but yeah, just what we want to do is get the employers, a student or an employee that comes out of school with the knowledge as well as being well prepared to do all those entry level things that, and like say an installation helper or something like that.
Yep.
We want them to learn how, we're going to teach them how to level a concrete slab, how to spot a hole without, you know, hitting wires or studs or joists or anything like that. Because, you know, I think back to when I began, I made a lot of those mistakes.
Yeah.
So why not teach them that before they get in front of the employer, how to see those mistakes before they happen?
Right.
Maybe save a few dollars there.
Yeah, no. So you guys definitely saw, you know, here's all the tips and tricks that I picked up along the way. Wouldn't it be nice to be able to pass these on to the students from the beginning and not necessarily have them learn all of these hard lessons, you know, all at once? We all know that apprentices are going to make mistakes and that's just a part of the learning journey, but it would be nice to kind of, you know, try and help out as much as possible,
minimize it a little bit.
That's right. It's beneficial for the apprentice and it's also beneficial for the contractor and the project as a result of that.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, that's great. That's awesome. And I think you guys have definitely accomplished that from what I've seen. I don't know if the listeners know or not, but JEDI has been working with GTA and partnered with GTA for a number of years now. And we've had very, very good experiences working with you all. So
yeah, it's been great for us as well.
Awesome. So, Joe, I think I'm going to move on over to you now. You're being very quiet over here. I think it's time to start asking you some questions. Joe, you want to tell the listeners, you know, how you got into carpentry and the trades? Because you are an Indigenous person. We don't necessarily see a lot of Indigenous Red Seal tradespeople. So you want to tell us maybe where you're from and kind of how you got into the trades?
Well, I'm from Burnt Church First Nations. Formerly Burnt Church First Nation. It's Eskenobitch.
Eskenobitch.
Yeah. Back in 96, the college came to town.
Okay.
So there was a pre-employment program.
Yep.
So I got selected to take the course.
Nice.
It was very thorough, thorough, and I was happy to be a part of that whole thing.
Yep.
Like learning the book from the books, the modules that they presented to us was very, very enjoyable. So the theory, the theory and the practical, they were well balanced.
And was it like a year kind of a, you know, is it similar to a pre-employment program nowadays or was it a little different back then?
It was the same.
Okay.
Was the same, except it was right on the reserve.
Oh, wow. Okay, so I didn't know that.
The resources that were available, there was an old co-op building there.
Okay.
But it was not in operation, so we used that as a shop, so they divvied that building in half.
Okay.
So one half was the class where there were desks.
Yep.
We had our own lockers and stuff. And the other half was all the stationary equipment there that we could use while we're training.
Yep.
So there was also a parking lot available for us to use to make our own batter boards and square, you know, make the building lines, et cetera.
Nice.
So that lasted a good 40 weeks.
Oh, wow. Okay.
The span of my career as a carpenter, before I got my Red Seal, all of this took place until today was about 30 years.
Wow.
So the span of 30 years was from becoming, getting my feet wet as a pre-employment, but I wasn't an apprentice yet.
Okay.
So I think it was about 6 to 10 years that I finally decided I'm going to get into the apprenticeship.
Yep. So you had been working without having been registered yet, and you were just kind of like learning honing your skills and practicing within carpentry during this time?
On and off.
Yeah, okay.
On and off.
Perfect.
There were some limitations as far as honing my skills, since it was mostly residential and renovations. Okay. I wanted to go further.
Right.
So, becoming an apprentice,
yep.
They sent me off to Moncton.
Okay.
And from Moncton, after my block one, I was employed by several companies down there.
Okay.
I moved to Fredericton, and in Fredericton, I joined the union, the Carpenters Union.
Okay.
For a little bit. So I got to my Red Seal in 2012.
Okay.
And after 2012, I was working here and there, and I was starting to get a hang of things, you know, and I started my own little contracting business. So
yep.
It was just me being a sub for some few general contractors and such.
Can I ask you a quick question?
Yeah.
What made you decide to actually get your Red Seal in carpentry? Because to my knowledge, it's not compulsory in carpentry for you to get your Red Seal. So what went towards you making that decision and that step to say, hey, I want to get my Red Seal in carpentry?
I just wanted to find that certain frontier,
right.
That certain kind of frontier where I can go beyond.
Yeah.
You know, what is, you know, behind that mountain there? You know, we can... I was looking for a certain benchmark in my life.
Right.
So
right.
To see what attempts that can be successful. And I just kept on going and said, oh, jumping, there's another hill I could climb here.
Right. It was almost like, how can I keep leveling up as much as possible within the trade? And this is just kind of like the next step.
Yes.
And at the time, did you know that, you know, getting a Red Seal would allow you to instruct? Like, was teaching on your mind at this point?
Well, it was a funny thing. An instructor approached me. I was at a store at the parking lot, and a fellow by the name of Gary, he's an instructor that taught me in Woodstock.
Shout out Gary from Woodstock.
Yeah. Yeah. He said, hey, Joe. Says, I got to get your number. So, okay. So why for? He says, we're looking for an instructor. I had to laugh a little bit on that. And I said, okay, sure. I never really thought of that. And he says, well, you're going to be an instructor. Okay, so here's my number. And I got the phone call from somebody else saying,
yeah.
Hey, I got, you know, your name came highly regarded and stuff. You know, I recommend it. And so how about starting such and such a date? And says, okay. Says, so what do I do? So he says, we'll show you how to do it and stuff like
okay.
that. So we... You know, and that's where it began.
And
I had lots
well,
of supports.
Hmm? You knew him well?
Not that guy on the phone, but I know Gary well. Because
okay.
when I finally got there, there's Gary welcoming me at the gate and shaking my hand.
Okay.
Gary works concrete.
Okay.
So when he shakes your hand...
you feel it.
He wants to make sure who's the boss.
Something we see often in the trades, eh?
Yeah. So I got a big welcome from the other instructors and
yep.
the other instructors that I was quite familiar with and how they do their things and stuff. And
yep.
they were just giving me pointers. And resources were just unlimited. These guys, you just showed me the ropes.
Right. They really wanted you to have a good experience teaching. They wanted to make it the best experience for you.
Yeah. Yeah. And from there on, I was on and off. I was getting some teaching gigs here and there,
okay.
but my name got referred to other institutions and stuff. Like,
do you think you stood out, you know, because you were an Indigenous trades teacher? Just because we just don't see a lot of Indigenous trades teachers? Like, do you think that was like, oh, hey, like, you know, this would be a cool person to bring into the community because, you know, he has a maybe like a different perspective than maybe other people? Or were you not quite there yet at this point?
Well, yeah, it's I think representation goes a long way. There's a lot of, there is a lot to be said about that.
It absolutely does.
Yeah. So people just want to see, you know, who are just entering the trades, who are
yeah.
just entering a course.
Yeah.
They would rather see someone like me,
yep,
who's right from day one,
yep,
explaining to them that, you know, they're, you know, what I said about, you know, my travels,
right,
to them on the first day.
Yep.
So they were saying, that could happen to me. So they're entertaining thoughts and just, you know, tearing down the myths that, you know, that are stopping them from going further and actually learning stuff.
Right. It's possible. And I know it sounds kind of super cheesy to say, but you really don't realize that those opportunities are out there for you until you see yourself represented out there.
Mm-hmm.
Almost like how you mentioned before, representation definitely does matter. And it's not just like a buzzword. You know what
yeah.
I mean? Like, it actually does mean something, and it helps a lot of people. It goes a
yeah.
long way.
Yeah.
Awesome. So how did you get involved with GTA?
By referral.
Oh. Now, was this Gary or someone else?
Well, the story was that I was working for post-secondary.
Okay.
I had a little contract with them. I was working as a apprentice counselor.
Okay.
Where I was working for the Fredericton area.
Okay.
So I had that job for about a year. So when that ended, I was thinking either one choice, I go back into contracting again,
right,
or find a company to work with, or I hold off a little bit,
okay,
and just kind of, you know, just ponder where I'm going, what direction
yeah,
I'm going
take
to take.
Yeah, take a little break. Yeah.
So somebody approached me and says, "Hey, have you? I got a friend that his name is Tom, who's looking for some instructor."
Right.
And I said, "Yeah." So I gave him my number, and then I got the call from Tom. So we had an interview, and here I am.
And now, Joe, you can be honest with us on this podcast. Just because Tom's sitting with us here, eh? You can share some other details. Did he give you a hard time in the interview, Joe?
Well, it started as this, you know. Joe, here's what we're going to do. We're going to go with this, we're going to do this, and this
right.
is going to start then, this is going to start that. What do
yeah.
you think? And I looked around, left, right, my right. You're talking to me? He says, yeah. So what do you say? Looks like I got the job.
Yeah, I guess this is a good sign, eh?
Yeah.
And at this point, too, were you used to people kind of asking what your feedback was, or you were kind of, you know, used to being kind of told what, you know, because at this point, Tom's kind of saying, "Hey, like, what do you think of this? Like,
mm-hmm.
you know, what's your opinion?" Was that something that you were used to experiencing, or was this kind of new for you to be like, "Oh, hey, like, they actually want to know what my thoughts and opinions on teaching are, or, you know, they care about my methods as well."
Well, I don't know. It's the thing about it being an instructor. There's lots of improvisational things that take place. Lots of right side of your brain. It's you know, you're getting very creative. You're doing lots of prepping, lots of research,
yep.
buying lots of books that you know, on self-help and on the trades, et cetera, et cetera. So I do lots of reading.
And I feel like you're speaking for instructors in general, but I feel like more instructors or people in general should be doing that. Because I think because it's common for you, you're like, of course, you know, I read self-help books and I try to improve myself and I try to give the students the best experiences possible. But the unfortunate reality is that not everyone takes the role that seriously. So I think it's really nice that you're talking about the importance of that.
Yeah, but that somehow, like, what I'm the landscape of all of that stuff is
yeah.
basically when I'm hired on as an instructor, all I'm doing is just kind of recollecting all the things that I've learned,
yeah.
and then Joe, you're going, you know, rather than putting me on the spot to say, what do you think of this? What do you think of that stuff?
Right.
It's more like your job is this. You're going to be teaching this. You know, is it yes or is it no?
Right.
Yeah.
But they
none.
Had trust in your teaching abilities enough to let you do what you thought would be best for the students.
Yes. I like the open palette, the clean canvas that's there.
Yeah.
And, you know, I start from there. I get creative and I like being creative. And the students see that too. because, you know, they don't want to see structure sometimes, especially when on their first day they're nervous.
Right.
They don't know if they're academically, if they have that kind of potential to, you know,
succeed.
Math is one thing.
Right.
They, from the get-go, they don't have that much confidence in their math abilities until I explain to them, check this out.
Right.
Wow. You know, they didn't see it that way.
It seems overwhelming to them because they're starting from square one, and you are there to kind of guide them through the process so they realize, hey, it's not that complicated. Anyone can do it, and it's probably a lot simpler than we even thought it could be.
Yep.
But I think, to your credit, Joe, I think that's just part of you and how wonderful of a teacher you are, and that's a credit to you specifically.
Well, I hope that...
I agree.
No, thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome, Joe.
I'm starting to blush a little bit.
That actually, I do have some other questions kind of like in the same line to kind of go with that. As I mentioned before, GTA has worked with Jedi in the past. Could you maybe tell the listeners, you know, for example, what's a common challenge that you see that new students face when learning a given subject? Like you said, math. So academic-wise, that can be a little intimidating. Mm-hmm. But is there something, and this is a question for both Joe and Tom, is there something that you see commonly almost every time you work with groups of students? Is there always like the same type of thing that's an issue? Or does it really depend on the group and the individual? If you want to skip it, we can and do another question as well.
Well, it's the cultural thing is, my background is that after high school, I stopped. I thought that, you know, learning just was stopping right there after high school.
Yep.
Like, I could not get into university. I tried.
Right.
And then I got into college just for forestry type of thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, after that was done, I didn't see any job placement.
Okay.
So, you know, we're talking like, say, going and, you know, using a spacing saw and working for a contractor and stuff.
Okay.
I did not have the wheels. I did not have the transportation of any kind. Just to get to the college and back. Okay. Then after the college is done, you're on your own. So that didn't work out.
Right.
So I can imagine that there are a lot of things like that logistically that don't make it possible for somebody to go into the workforce, especially having wheels, you know, having a job and affording a car. It's
so
important
less about,
for the profession.
Right. So less about the actual training aspect and more about kind of the external factors like transport to and from job site, transport to and from training, you know, institution, wherever you are. Those things are the common things that you see continuously even today as an issue.
So that I know that that's just one of the hurdles that maybe the average person can, you know, face
and try to
be successful. After that's done, you know, sky's the limit. If I can go to college, if I can go, you know, live in another community and, you know, different, you know, go through that cultural barrier that sometimes it kind of gets discouraging, you know, for you to. So it's those things is it's a challenge for every person coming from the reserve.
Yeah. Or even other groups of people who are non-Indigenous as well, right? Could be an issue, but specifically this is what you've seen within the communities.
So coaching can be important. Coaching and instruction, telling them that, you know, you're doing good in the math, you're doing good in the theory, and you're doing really good in the trade. Just, you know.
Positive reinforcement and giving credit where it's due goes a long way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there probably is a lot of, like, issues back home sometimes that can be a factor that just kind of affects their confidence. So if they go past that and drop that certain kind of baggage and stuff and just pick up a tool and just go, man, you know. I hear you get enough for a car. It says, oh yeah, you know, I got my driver's license yesterday. Good for you. Stuff.
Yeah.
So it's the support. It's the it's that stuff, that kind of stuff that's really gold that helps them, you know, along with the support of their family members, their cousins, their brothers, their role models. So, you know, like, drop your baggage, find a, you know, a good friend to bounce ideas off of.
Absolutely.
And let them hold you to it.
Yeah.
And after that is, after you got those blocks, those building blocks in place, you can actually find a career. You can actually, you know, see a future. You could actually have some objectives. You could actually have something to look forward to.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Tom?
One challenge that I can think of in the future that I really want to hammer this point home, because I found it to be a challenge every time, and even I'm just starting to finally understand what needs to happen myself, is the pathway to apprenticeship moving forward when you get into the trade. Because it is, really truly is, on the individual themselves to take control of making that happen. Because there's, you know, you go to work for a company, you got the owner, you might have a manager that you're dealing with, and then you've got to tie that in with apprenticeship or skilled trades New Brunswick, and everyone has to work together to get you there.
Yes.
Everybody's busy, and time goes by real fast, and, you know, business can be seasonal, you know, and what I've learned is the only time that these hours are going to count, they'll always count, but in order for them to count immediately, you need to get registered as an apprentice as soon as you have your full-time job.
Yeah.
Because if anybody puts that off, if you let your manager or owner or even apprenticeship drop the ball along the way and you don't get registered and then you're laid off, well, I've seen some people feel defeated by this.
Right.
But the reality is you can still go and apply for those hours years later, but it gets harder, and it's staying on top of everybody to make it happen.
That's right. And you're saying this is a lot of moving parts.
Exactly.
As an adult who's now, you know, going on their own career path, it is up to you to take that into your own hands and make sure you're being responsible, and you make sure that this is like a priority of yours as an apprentice.
Exactly. And it's a challenge. So it's not like you can just go, and it's not as easy as go and sit down and sign off most times. You know, it's, you go and you tell your manager, all of a sudden your manager's off sick, and then he gets back, he's pushed to do it. He goes and contacts skilled trades in New Brunswick. Well, they're on vacation.
Right, you know, right. Like, and this is just way of the world, right?
Yeah,
this
time
is just
goes by. Take control of your future.
Awesome. You heard it here, folks. This is the key to your apprenticeship success.
Be proactive.
That's right. And honestly, like, you know, we're laughing about it, but it really is the truth. And honestly, I think that's super great advice for any apprentice, just union, non-union, what have you, just anyone. Just kind of keep that at the front of your mind, people, if you're listening.
Yes.
Awesome. So thanks for that. Just to kind of complete this section, what's one thing that you want to pass on to every student before they graduate? Tom, I'll start with you.
I think that's it right there.
Right there, right?
Take control of your future. Get your apprenticeship going, you know, and work where you're happy. Find a spot you're happy and treated well, and, you know, but you got to put in the effort too, you know. You got to show up on time, bring your game, have the proper tools, you know.
Awesome. Joe, similar?
Just about the same.
Just about.
Just get, you know. If you have a goal, or if you don't, you know, or if you don't have a goal, get your goal.
Yeah. Okay.
And then work for it.
Perfect. All right. Next question's for you, Tom. How did you start to want to get involved with working with Indigenous communities? Kind of where did that come from?
Okay. I kind of feel like it's meant to be. Like, I'm a firm believer in universe,
like
all this stuff, right? So, and I actually, when you asked the question about how Joe and I met, I feel like it was fate, really. And so anyway, along the way, go back 8 years ago, I started a business with a friend of mine, David Paul. We have a business together called Aboriginal Development Contractors.
Okay.
We're a general contractor. So we've been working together for 8 years. But before that, leading up to it, I used to work with his son going back 20 years ago, and I met him one time back then. And all along the way, I keep bumping into Dave everywhere I go.
Right.
And tripping over him at every event and everything that's going on, you know. And then we get talking more and more, and we see the opportunity with, you know, federal funding that's supposed to be coming down and stuff like that. So we decided to partner together. We're still waiting to see those opportunities.
Right.
We haven't benefited from that yet. but then we get talking more and more, and we both have the same vision that we want to develop a real indigenous workforce. So, you know, doing all these trainings that we do through JEDI or different communities, I'm always looking for, you know, the person that we can call on later when we need them. And I want to help develop people to do their own businesses. If they're entrepreneurial, you know, I want to help motivate them to get started on their own, and you know, maybe we can work together in the future.
Right.
That sort of thing. So I guess the big vision for us is, you know, taking advantage of these government contracts if and when they come.
Right.
And
right.
Having a real, true indigenous workforce ready to rock and roll.
I love that.
Yeah.
Love to hear it. We share some common goals, Tom.
Yeah.
So the partnership with JEDI and just Indigenous communities in general, it's meant a lot to you along the way, I imagine. Has your opinion changed? Is there something you've learned? Is there something you've seen along the way that you want to note?
No, we've really enjoyed it. We've enjoyed all the connections we've made within the communities. And it was like timing was perfect there too. Because
right.
We had just met Joe as we started working with you guys, and you know, it's like everything just worked out perfectly, and it's been great all along. We've made a lot of connections and getting ourselves out there more known and stuff like that. So it's
awesome.
Been perfect for us.
Great.
Yeah.
We love working with you, too.
Yeah.
Joe, this is a question for you now.
Okay.
Can you share a moment where you saw a real impact that you or GTA has had on a student within the community specifically? You don't have to name names or anything, but just anything that comes to mind. A few, even, if you want.
Well, it's one big success story. One of a few. I can. Well, there's this one right here.
Okay.
She started off, you know, very quiet.
Yep.
Shy. Didn't know what she was getting herself into. Until, you know, until I was explaining how to read a tape.
Okay.
So it's a matter of just folding a piece of paper.
Right.
Everyone had a piece of paper, and I just folded the paper in half, and then I folded the other paper in half. So she was doing that, and on that first day, she was learning to read a tape by using a paper and folding it in half, and then making it a quarter, making it a 1/8. So we just started drawing the fractions. And just starting that way in those little increments, just the little seeds in the nice soil and stuff.
Okay.
I was starting to see a sprout of discovery,
okay,
in her approach on things. So, in midpoint, she admitted that she had some learning difficulties,
okay,
like reading and stuff. But she was right keen when I was on the board and explaining what I wrote on the board,
okay,
with relation to the, you know, the handouts of, you know, this and that stuff. But she would rather just close that because, you know, no.
Overwhelming.
This doesn't work for me. I'm going to listen to Joe.
Right, right.
Okay. So that went on for a good few weeks and stuff. And then finally, when we start getting out in the workplace, she was keen on using the power tools and using the measuring tape.
Oh, yeah.
And then, man, she just rocketed, just start, you know, showing authority using that tool.
Right.
You know, using that tape. And come the end of the course, she had a certain kind of authority over the class.
that confidence and empowerment that kind of came with the learning the new skills, it made a really big difference,
yeah,
for her.
And, well, you know, there were problems that a lot of most First Nations people feel, you know, in the home front.
Yeah.
And there were challenges along the way that she would open up about, but she, her life has considerably changed. Now she's like in very high demand in the local community as
wow.
as a skilled, you know, not a technically like Red Seal carpenter just yet, but I hope that later on she becomes an apprentice.
Absolutely.
But she's in high demand in the community as a, you could say, like as a good carpentry skilled worker.
Absolutely,
there.
Yes.
So the contrast of where she started and after the course ended,
yeah,
is just it's just phenomenal.
It's amazing to see that, right? It
yeah.
really is. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you develop very close relationships with the students as well, right? You're spending a lot of time, you're teaching them, you're passing on your passion, and I've seen this firsthand myself. Any teacher that is very passionate about what they're teaching has a very positive impact on the students just in general, because, you know, they're around that positivity and your passion so much that they're like, hey, you know what,
yeah.
this is fun, this is great, Joe's
yeah.
having a good time, so am I. And I feel like I've really seen that. But more than just a few students, like an entire class of people, you know, they look at you almost like a family member now. And for me, I think that's super special.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it's kind of an aspect of the trade that maybe people don't talk about enough. You know, I know that might sound like mushy-gushy to some people, but I think it is important. You know, our mentors in the trades are something that we need to be focusing on, how important good mentors really are and how we might not have enough of them out there. And honestly, it's just nice to hear people taking the actual mentorship very seriously. And I know that sometimes due to project and time constraints, we all know that I'm sure there are people who would like to put a lot more time and energy into mentoring sometimes than what they can allow for. But I feel like with GTA and with you, Joe, because you're the instructor that I know the most, I feel like you've really accomplished that along the years. And
yes.
he's like, what do I say? Do
thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Have you learned anything from the students? Have the students taught you anything over the years?
Nothing specifically.
It's nothing that comes to mind.
Of course, I learned a lot from them.
Right.
It's like one of those morning fog moments. You just sort of appreciate the moment when it's there.
Yeah.
Those moments are, they do have some substance.
Yes.
But I just can't define exactly those moments, but it's sort of magical.
Yeah.
So, you know, you just got to look forward to every morning and you see that morning fog again, like in the mist and stuff like this. And then it's gone in daytime. I don't understand. I don't know how that works.
You know it's there, but you can't put a name to it. But everyone knows it's there. It's kind of a vibe, if
yeah.
you will.
Yeah, a vibe or a magic or something.
Right.
Being a good example to those guys and then somehow seeing them reflect that example and the smiles that just come from all of that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's rounded off to just plain magic.
Yeah. I love that.
I learned that magic. Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, the exchange of all of that. It's just incredible.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
When you started out in the trades, did you ever imagine that you would be teaching within Indigenous communities one day?
Nope.
No way.
I never thought of that, no. I thought I was just going to be working for a company.
Right.
And maybe just being, you know, just a carpenter, like any other carpenter, talking to sailor talk and then hitting my thumb once in a while, you know. Yeah. So.
And does it feel full circle now to have been able to experience that? Does that kind of feel very full circle of you? You doing your training within community from the beginning, and now you're able to pass those tips and tricks on to, I want to say, fellow community members, you know, almost 30 years later. Like, what does that mean to you?
The energy of understanding, this is to practice what you preach type of thing stuff. So I'm still, I am still a student at heart.
Yes.
At the same time, I enjoy whittling and, you know, building stuff. and actually sharing my knowledge of building stuff with others. So the vehicle of having a company such as GTA taking me to these, you know, working for First Nations communities at the same time, it just gives me the fuel just to keep on teaching what I have learned and teaching more of what I'm learning tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Wonderful. All right. So, Tom, I want to ask you before we wind down here, for the future of GTA, where do you hope to see the company, you know, in 5, 10, 15 years even?
Wow.
No pressure or anything, Tom.
Well, we've got some pretty big goals. I would like to see us having our own high school someday.
Wow.
That caters to trades.
That'd be amazing.
High school. That's for people who are, you know, more hands-on, you know, gifted in that way.
Yep.
That, you know, maybe they struggle with books and stuff like that. Like, find a way to cater to them and help grow the trades that way.
Awesome.
That's my ultimate dream.
Great. I love that. It's pretty much just like, how can I level up within this trade? How can I, what's the final frontier here?
Yeah.
I love that. What about you, Joe? Where do you hope to be in the next five-ish, 10 years, say?
Ah.
Retired?
Teaching some more. I don't know. Yeah, we'll find out.
All right. I love, you know what? I actually really like that. That you're just kind of like, wherever it takes me is where it takes me. And your career has kind of taken you around, you know, along different avenues as the years have gone on. And you seem to be pretty happy. So I feel like that's kind of like your secret sauce. You're just going with the flow and enjoying yourself.
Well, the tortoise and the hare type of thing. I enjoy the tortoise side of things. You know, as opposed to the hare who just sees things zoom by, you know, just appreciating the small things and stuff.
Yeah.
Because you remember those small things, as opposed to the hare who just keeps on running. And, it can be dangerous.
It can be. So I feel like there's a lot of balance between you and Tom in that way. Like, you guys complement each other very well as like a team. Because you bring two very different perspectives, but you also work very, very well together. So I like that there's that balance there amongst you guys.
Yeah.
Love to see that.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So if you guys are okay with this, we're going to wrap up, but we're going to do it in a very fun way. And it's what I like to call a rapid fire round. Okay. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask you some fun questions, and I'll just take turns going back and forth between the both of you, and I'll just get you to answer whatever comes to mind quickly, all right? So are we ready to rock and roll? Ready to jump into it?
Sure thing.
Awesome. Joe, I'm going to start with you. Favorite tool. What's your favorite tool?
Skill saw.
Skill saw. Come from a carpenter. Tom, what's your favorite tool?
Hammer and a chisel.
We're going with a smooth tie here between hammer and chisel. Awesome. What did you think was the hardest thing to learn in your trade when you were coming up, Joe?
Well, I would say hip roofs and one of those advanced mathematics regarding roof framing.
Okay, solid. Tom?
I'm glad Joe goes first, gives me time to think.
Sneaky. I'm starting with you next time.
Something a little different. Dealing with difficult people.
Oh, that's a good one. Not necessarily, you know what? That is skill related because you really do need to have the people skills to kind of manage that sometimes.
So good to know that I'm not difficult.
On the job site, Tom. Oh, do you prefer, are you a coffee guy or an energy drink guy?
Coffee all the way.
What about you, Joe?
Coffee.
Oh, you guys are old school with the coffees. Okay. Tom, if you could give your younger self, you know, Tom who's just doing this, 16-year-old Tom, if you could give him some advice, what would you tell him?
Keep it simple, stupid.
Nice. Joe, what would you say to your younger self?
Don't do anything stupid. Wait a minute. Don't do anything stupid.
I like that.
Wait, I, no, I, I'd say like a just drop your baggage and just learn. Go to college.
Okay.
And go to college. Go to college. Get up in the morning. You know, find a skill. Go to college.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
That's it.
Awesome. Tom, if you weren't in the trades, what career do you think you would have taken?
Huh. That's a good one. Bartender on a cruise ship.
Oh, that's nice. Solid, solid answer. Joe, what about you? Where do you think your path would have taken you if you decided to go in a different direction from the skilled trades?
Oh, not really sure. I would have been in forestry, probably.
Nice. Okay, so trades realm, you know, trade, you know.
Yeah, but yeah, lots of, I just totally enjoy the hands-on and working outdoors type of thing. So eventually, it would always end up in the trades.
Okay, so you were always going to end up right here.
It's always the trades.
Awesome. Love that, love that. Okay, is there one trade, Tom, that you don't work in but that you admire? Like, you got to give props to welders?
Welding, yeah.
Nice.
I love welding, and I've done very little of it.
Yep.
The little that I have done, I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, and it's a real skill.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about you, Joe?
Electrical.
Electrical?
I'm scared of electricity.
Yeah, I agree with you. You got to definitely give props to the Sparkies on that one.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I heard some stories and stuff from when those guys would tell me. Anyway, I admire them and their courage.
Okay.
But they have the training to know, you know, of course. They would tell me some, you know, shocking stories. Pardon the pun. But, you know,
now, Joe, how long were you waiting to drop that one on us? Here's my chance.
Oh, boys.
Tom, this question is for you. What's your must-have song or artist when you're working on the job site? Or are you a man that likes to jump around a little bit?
That's difficult because I like just about everything except for country.
Okay, this is a no country zone for a Tom job site. Okay, guys, duly noted. What about you, Joe? What's your go-to playlist for working on the job site?
When I'm around town, I'm going to put a country song on my car and blare it.
This is the balance I was talking about
just
before.
Just make sure it's old country. I like the
Tom Jones.
Tom Jones. Alrighty, I love this. That's awesome.
The song I would like to play though is all the time is Led Zeppelin. Ramble On.
Ramble On.
That's a good song.
I'm partial to the Rover myself, Led Zeppelin wise, but yeah, I like a nice good rock tune for working as well. Now, my final question for the rapid fire round, okay? Joe, I'm going to start with you. If you could master one new skill instantly, what would it be?
Oh.
And we'll keep it contained to a job site skill, okay? We're not going to, we won't venture off into new territory.
It would have to do with learning circular stairs.
Ooh.
Those fancy stairs. You walk into those hotels and some, you know, it's just those elaborate Titanic lobby looking stairs.
It's,
oh man, it would be just to be a fly on the wall to watch those craftsmen do that, or even help out, be the board passer.
Be the board, just the observer,
yeah,
the supervisor.
Yeah.
I've also heard people similarly say that about boat building as well. It's kind of a niche thing, like large boats. You know, I've heard people say, oh, it would have been nice to be a fly on the wall to see, like, the Blue Nose be built or something like that back in the day.
Yes. Yeah. That's true craftsmanship right there. It's a breed, I hope, that's still living.
Right.
You know,
right.
You know these guys, and I know, I'm sure it does.
Yeah.
I'm sure it does. There's some really hardcore craftsmen, you know, that it's a family business.
You know,
pass it down.
Great. Tom, what would be the new skill that you'd like to master instantly, if you could?
I'm going to say the toughest, highly underrated skill is communication.
Communication. You feel like you could brush up on your comms?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
It's the biggest challenge I've got, I think.
I don't know. I think you're doing a pretty good job. I got to give you some credit here, Tom. You're soaring.
I think Joe would agree, eh, Joe?
Totally agree.
Awesome. So thanks for joining me today, guys. That's about it for today. It was
thanks for having us.
Really
so
nice
fun.
To have you guys. This was awesome. Super fun.
Yes.
So it's always nice to see you. And before we leave, if you want to just give one final piece of information to maybe, you know, a young listener who is thinking about entering the skilled trades. I know you've given quite a few pieces of advice so far, but any final comments that you want to add in, feel free.
Begin with the end in mind.
Oh, that's a good one.
Wow, that's good, Tom. That's great. And on that note, that's the end of the podcast. Thank you for listening, everyone.